Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Vishnupaha Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Shrata Shrata Shishimade Si Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jaya Vishnupaha Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Shrata Shrata Shishimade Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Shri Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Iskum Bibhidi Fandaracharya Shri Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prem Sakho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopagopina Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindam Dham Ki Jai. Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Shri Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol. All Gauris Samrivotis, all Gauris Samrivotis, all Gauris Samrivotis, all Gauris Shishi Guru and Gaurangam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Text 29. Brahmadayo yat krita setu palam yat karanam vishvam idam chamayam. Ajnakari yasya pishachacharyam. Aho vivumna sharitam vidambanam. Brahmadayo yat krita setupalam. Yat karanam vishvam idam cha mayam. Ajnakari yasya pishachacharyam. Aho vibhumna charitam vidambanam. Please chant. Vitase tu palam yat karana vishvam idam cha mayam Ramadayo yat krita setu palam yat karana vishvam idam chamayam adnakari yasya pishachacharyam aho vibhumna charitam vidamnam. Brahma Adayam. Demigods like Brahma. Yat. Whose. Kritam. Activities. Setu. Religious rites. Palam. Observes. Yat. One who is. Karanam. The origin of Vishwam, the universe, Idam, this, Cham, also, Mayam, material energy, Ajnakari, order carrier, Yasyam, whose. Pishacham, devilish, charyam, activity, ahu, O my Lord, vibhumnam, of the great, charitam, character, vidambanam, simply imitation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Demigods like Brahma also follow the religious rites observed by him. He is the controller of the material energy, which causes the creation of the material world. He is great, and therefore his devilish characteristics are simply imitation. Purport. Lord Shiva is the husband of Durga, the controller of the material energy. Durga is personified material energy, and Lord Shiva, being her husband, is the controller of the material energy. He is also the incarnation of the mood of ignorance and one of the three deities representing the Supreme Lord. As his representative, Lord Shiva is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is very great, and his renunciation of all material enjoyment is an ideal example of how one should be materially unattached. One should therefore follow in his footsteps and be unattached to matter, not imitate his uncommon acts like drinking poison. Brahmadayo yat kritase tupala yat karanam vishvamidam chamaya ajnakari yasya pishachacharya aho bibumna charitam vidamnam. Om agyana timirandasya jananjana shilakaya Chakshurun militam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sinubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we have a beautiful verse this morning, and basically this is continuation of last six verses. They are glorifying Lord Shiva. Could anybody tell me who is actually speaking these verses other than Pranagovinda and a few others? Yes, but within that conversation, there is actually several conversations. So who is actually speaking currently these last few shlokas? Who? Kashyapa Muni. Thank you. That's right. And the reason I'm asking, sometimes we kind of lose track, actually, who is speaking. And it's really interesting to find. Basically, as we know, the conversation started with Vidura inquiring what was the reason that the king of the demons, Hiranyaksha, fought with the Lord Varahadev. And in chapter 13, we find basically, it's mentioned how Varahadev killed Hiranyaksha, but they don't really go into details till later on Vidura inquires, what was the reason actually they fought in the first place. And Prabhupada mentions in a couple of the purports actually towards the end of the 13th chapter, and Prabhupada is saying, every one of us is fond of hearing some wonderful narration, but most stories are neither auspicious nor worth hearing because they are of the inferior quality of material nature. Inferior quality of material nature. So these kind of descriptions, they are very auspicious. These beautiful stories about the activities of the Lord, they are for the benefit of all the living entities in the universe. And whoever hears them and remembers them actually, definitely gains blessings of the Lord. So, like I mentioned earlier, basically in this particular verse, Lord Shiva is being glorified by Kashyapa Muni. There is that wonderful shloka in the 12th canto. Naimna ganam yata ganga, devanam achuto yata, Vaishnavam yatha shambhu puranam idam tata. And the verse translates basically like this. It says, Just as the Gange is the greatest of all rivers, Lord Achyuta, the supreme among the deities, and Lord Shambhu, Lord Shiva, the greatest of the Vaishnavas, so Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest of all Puranas. So we find Lord Shiva here mentioned as the greatest of the Vaishnavas. In the verse prior to this one that we are reading this morning, I liked how it was described basically. I'm going to read it briefly. It says, unfortunate foolish persons, not knowing that he is engaged in his own self, laugh at him. Such foolish persons engage in maintaining the body which is eatable by dogs. With dresses, ornaments, garlands, and ointments. I like how Bhagavatam is very strong sometimes and to the point, basically. So foolish people, they sometimes criticize Lord Shiva because his activities are very unusual. You know, he basically, he's always in a trance, in meditation. But for the materialistic persons, they may think like, you know, they can't really understand his behavior. Sometimes he is dancing wildly, naked. He has a garland of skulls. He covers himself with ashes. He lives in, you know, he hangs around, you know, crematorium, and all the ghosts, they follow him. So very unusual personality. But, you know, this verse is saying he is actually very deeply engaged within himself. So Prabhupada is saying in today's purport how we should actually learn from Lord Shiva, how he's prime example of detachment from the material enjoyment. And of course, we can also understand that he's teaching us by his own example how one should be actually seeking for the happiness within. In this material world, everybody's chasing for the happiness, you know, more, you know, wonderful cars, you know, more opulent homes, bigger bank balance, you know, different kind of, you know, sense objects that we assume they will give us happiness and pleasure, but in the long run, it's usually frustration. Recently, I heard a wonderful story from Indidrumna Maharaj. He was traveling in Rishikesh, and he visited one of the ashrams. He said he has one sadhu, his old friend. And basically, it's kind of like up in the region near Himalayas. So when he went there to visit him, you know, they were sitting one afternoon in, you know, one field overlooking the valley in a distance, and they noticed one creature roaming out through the forest. And Maharaj asked, what's that? And this sadhu explained, actually, it's a deer, but not just any deer. It's a musk deer. And to be honest, I had no clue what musk deer is. But it kind of really intrigued me. So they explained basically this particular deer is very unique. It actually only lives in the Himalayan regions. And it's known for its very heavenly fragrance. Essentially, the male of musk deer produces particular scent, which is known for apparently for thousands of years. It's also used for the like medicinal purposes, and it's also used for perfumes and sometimes even in the temples for the worship. So it has a really heavenly aroma. I was curious. Basically, some say that it's more expensive than gold. And actually, I calculated. I was, you know, I'm the number guy, so I like to see the numbers. Basically, 1 gram of musk, raw musk, is about $300. And if you compare that to the 1 ounce of gold, it comes to about $8,000 per 1 ounce of that substance. So it's almost like 2-3 times the cost of the gold. So very, very expensive and very, very rare. So this beautiful creature is very shy, doesn't really, you know, you can't just, you know, it's very rare to actually spot them. They're very shy and usually live in seclusion. But why am I telling you all this? So the musk deer basically also notices its own fragrance, you know, at a particular time of the year. And then it starts to run around, you know, almost like mad, like searching for that smell. And it's seeking around and jumping and going crazy, trying to find the source of it, not realizing that it's actually coming from, you know, within itself. So similarly, we, you know, conditioned souls in material world, we are looking everywhere, running like mad, trying to find happiness in this world, not realizing that actually true happiness is within the heart. So Lord Shiva is teaching us by his example. He is deep in meditation, you know, constantly worshiping his beloved Lord Sankarshan. We also remember when Narada Muni was traveling different places, and he was seeking who is the greatest recipient of Lord Vishnu's mercy. He started on this planet. He went, you know, visited one Brahmana, then he visited the king, and then they pointed, you know, we are nothing, you know, just see Lord Indra. He is actually true recipient of Lord Vishnu's mercy. And as we know, Narada Muni, you know, keeps, you know, traveling, and actually he visits all these great personalities. But each of them would point out there is actually greater devotee than, you know, themselves, which is amazing quality of Vaishnavas. They always take very humble position. So Indra said, you know, basically your father, Lord Brahmaji, he is the greatest recipient of Lord Vishnu's mercy. So then Narada goes there to visit Brahma. And he offers all the prayers and worship. And, you know, he says, oh, the controller of the universe. And Brahma gets upset. Didn't I teach you better than that? you know, I'm not supreme controller. Lord Vishnu is the supreme. And how you can, you know, speak such nonsense? Like, when Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu, basically, the Lord chastised me and he said, oh, lotus-born one, don't give these kind of blessings to the demons anymore. Because Brahma gave blessing to Hiranyakashipu that, you know, he wouldn't be killed neither in the air, neither on the earth. And, you know, we know demons, they try to cheat the material laws, thinking that they can become immortal, but they can't. So Lord Vishnu chastised me. He said, oh, Brahma, lotus-born one, don't give this kind of blessings to the demons. But, you know, foolish as I am, I continue to make offenses to the Lord. And even those appointed by me, they also offended the Lord. So how could I be the greatest recipient of Lord Vishnu's mercy? And then on top of everything, I stole Lord's friends in Vrindavan. You know, I made such great offense by stealing the cowboys from Raj while the Lord was playing. So Brahma is like that, regretting. And then he basically changes the story. He said, but Lord Shiva, he is the greatest. And then he starts glorifying Lord Shiva. And he basically inspires Narada to go visit Lord Shiva. So then Narada goes to Shivaloka, and he arrives there and he finds Lord Shiva deep in, you know, meditation, surrounded by his close associates, worshipping Lord Sankarshan. And same thing, Narada falls down in Dandavats, offering his pranams and offering beautiful prayers to Lord Shiva. And a similar thing happens. Lord Shiva is very upset, you know, why are you glorifying me? And we can see the character of great devotees. They don't want to be glorified. They just want to transfer the worship to other devotees. They don't want to take credit by themselves. So basically, Narada tries to, you know, basically offer great prayers to Lord Shiva and, you know, describe how wonderful he is, how his activities are worthy of worship. And then at one point, Lord Shiva gets, you know, seemingly very upset, and Narada is worried, like, oh my gosh, I made offense. And then Narada said, in a little bit softer, you know, approach, but for sure you know the very intricate exchanges between Lord Vishnu and his devotees. So indirectly then Narada tries to again worship Lord Shiva. So that goes on for a while, till at one point Lord Shiva basically starts to glorify the residents of Vaikuntha. And we can see he just wanted to take the subject matter to, you know, from himself being worshipped to glorifying the other devotees. So Lord Shiva starts speaking about Vaikuntha Vasis, how wonderful they are, their devotion is, you know, has no end, and Lakshmi Devi. And basically, Narada is ready to go to Vaikuntha now to visit the residents of the Vaikuntha Dham. But Lord Shiva grabs him for the hand and said, wait. He said, like, oh, Narada, in your great enthusiasm to meet all these great devotees, you have actually become forgetful. He said, don't you know that Lord is actually present in this world? He is actually right now in Dwaraka. But before you go there, he said, I have actually one very special secret that I can only whisper to your ear. I can't speak it loud. So Lord Shiva is actually going to tell Narada that there is actually one really special devotee. And who that is? Grandson of Diti. Who can tell me who that is? Prahlad! Harivo! Yes, Shri Prahlad. So, but Shiva said he's actually whispering that to Narada's ear because Parvati Devi is very close and he doesn't want to disturb her by glorifying Prahlad over Lakshmi Devi. So he's whispering, basically telling Narada, there is Prahlad, you should go visit him. He's the greatest recipient of Lord Vishnu's mercy. So we can see these are wonderful, wonderful exchanges between devotees. One time, sages were kind of having conversation and they were discussing who is the greatest in this world. So one of them said, the sky is the greatest because it covers the entire planet, sky. And then another sage said, no, that's not right. Actually, clouds can cover the sky. And because of that, clouds are greater than the sky. And then another sage said, no, that's not right either. Actually, the wind is the greatest because the wind can carry the clouds. The wind is so powerful, it can move the clouds. So they're having, you know, debate like that. And then one of them said, actually, mountains are more powerful and greater than the wind because they can block the wind. And then the other one said, actually, if we analyze things deeper, we will understand that earth is the greatest because the earth can support the mountain. Isn't that so? The mountain is sitting on the earth. So the earth is the greatest. And then another sage said, actually, God is the greatest because he actually holds the earth. So finally, the God himself, he appeared. And he said, actually, my devotee is the greatest because he holds even myself within his heart. Therefore, my devotee, he is the greatest. So I found that really amazing how the Lord considers his devotee to be the greater than himself. All right, so let's see what else I have. So yeah, there is a beautiful verse also in Bhagavad Gita at the end of 12th chapter, which says, Yetu dharma amritam idam yat hoktam paryupasate shradadana mat parama bhaktaste tivame priya. And the translation is like this. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and who completely engage themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. It's, you know, that word very is twice used here, which I find very fascinating. So we want to follow up in the examples of these great personalities like Lord Shiva, Prahlad, Narada. All these are examples. This particular incident that happens basically between Kashyapa Muni and Aditi is very, very instructive for anybody in human society who is trying to be civilized. Essentially, the pregnancy that happens, there is, you know, so many instructions, especially for the Vaishnavas. As we know, basically, in the Vedic culture, the Garbhadhana Samskara is very, very important. Garbhadhana Samskara, which is the rite of conceiving the child, is basically prescribed how it should be done at particular time, you know, at particular place, and you know, there's certain things to avoid. And we find that in this particular case, the sun was setting, and therefore it was inauspicious. According to the book of Samskaras, the appropriate time for procreation is either 3 hours after the sunset or 3 hours before the sunrise. And that is the way for civilized society to find essentially, you know, perfect lifestyle, and to also create the population that is inclined to the worship of the Lord. So many beautiful instructions are there, but what kind of, you know, what leaves really the biggest impression on me, at least, in this chapter is not so much really what happened with, you know, this particular case, you know, where we find that, you know, Diti made offense. To me, it's more fascinating her behavior after she actually realizes what has happened. What is her attitude? We find, I mean, I don't want to kind of ruin the story because these verses are actually yet to come. But we will find that her faith in Supreme Lord is actually unshakable. She is still so devoted to Lord Vishnu. And she basically begs through her husband, she begs for the forgiveness of Lord Shiva. And not only that, she holds her pregnancy for 100 years. Can you imagine that? Because she doesn't want to create disturbance in the universe. She knows that her sons are going to become demons. So she's not, you know, trying to cause any troubles for the demigods. So she's holding these embryos in her womb for 100 years. So much that the entire universe becomes disturbed. And the devatas, they approach Brahmaji and ask, like, what is happening? Anyhow, these verses are yet to come, but please pay attention, what is the attitude of Diti once she is actually, you know, told by Kashyapa, you know, what's going to happen. And how actually happy she is that her sons will be actually killed by Vishnu, and that her grandson will be one of the greatest devotees. So it actually reveals her true heart, that, you know, amazing, amazing personalities. So I will end in a minute. I just kind of wanted to share one beautiful article. This is actually from Srila Prabhupada's morning walks. And one devotee is asking Prabhupada, what does that really mean, like, that one can attain perfection by even lava matra, which means 11th portion of 1 second. Can you imagine how short that is? You know, 1 second happens like this, but 11th portion of 1 second is enough to attain perfection when one meets pure devotee. So this devotee, Pancha Dravida Swami, and this is by Hari Shauri Prabhu. So Pancha Dravida Swami wanted to know how a person can attain perfection simply from one lava, one eleventh of a second's association with a pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada stopped and turned to him as we all gathered around him. He said, that is like a dry wood, which can be ignited immediately. Similarly, if one is sincere, then he immediately becomes spiritually ignited. And if he is still moist from material contact, it may take hundreds of years or lifetimes. A pure devotee is like a match and the recipient the wood. If both are good, then there is a fire. So I don't know if you ever tried to burn, like, you know, moist wood. I actually tried this winter. You know, we had some wood that fell from the storm, but it wasn't fully dry. And we, you know, it was, you know, some days in January were really cold. So we were trying to use it in our fireplace. But I realized it takes so much effort to burn it because it's not fully dry. And not only that, it creates so much smoke. And I thought, you know, man, this is such over-endeavor. You know, with the dry wood, you get such beautiful heat and it burns nicely and, you know, creates so much less smoke. So that is a big difference. And Prabhupada said, by following the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness, one becomes like a dry wood, ready to be ignited with that good association. So we want to become like that. We want to become ready. And when that good association comes by the grace of the Lord, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas, that it will spark the fire in our heart, the fire of devotion to the Lord. So I'll stop here. If anybody would like to make any comment, any questions, please go ahead. Oh, yes, Mother Ragatmika.
In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that Lord Shiva is also the incarnation of the mode of ignorance. I understood that, truly an incarnation of the mode of ignorance? I thought it was in charge of the mode of ignorance. I mean, he says that, of course, in the purport as well, in charge of Durga. I mean, well, the material energy. He's in charge of the material energy. What do you understand? Have you heard that exactly stated like that, an incarnation of the mode of ignorance?
Well, like you said, my understanding is that Lord Shiva is in charge of the mood of ignorance, but he himself is unattached by the mood of ignorance.
Okay.
even though he appears like he is, even though, you know, he's covered in the ashes from crematorium, and he's followed by the ghosts and pishachas and, you know, all kind of ghastly beings. But he himself he's not, you know, touched by the mood of ignorance. He's transcendental in the sense that he's above it.
Okay.
Pranagovinda, you want to elaborate more on this? No, I don't.
We discussed last week, there's a three aspect of Shiva. Vishnu Tattva Shiva, the Sada Shiva, Mukunda Prabhu mentioned class giver, who is that? Krishna. Nagaraj Prabhu spoke. So there is a Vishnu Tattva Shiva. We are not talking about Vishnu Tattva Shiva. Then there is a Shambhu Tattva Shiva. Then there is a Rudra Tattva Shiva. If you look at it, Madhya Lila chapter 20:303, you can read it. That Prabhupada writes, he is a product of tamagun. He is not only tamagun avatar or incarnation, he is a product of tamagun, product of maya.
Which one is that?
You have, Prabhu, you have, Prabhu, Krishna Kripa, you have access? Chaitanya Charitamrita? 311. Shiva, Maya, Shakti, Sangi, Maya, Shakti, Sangi, Guna, Sangi, Tamagun, Abesh, Maya, Tita, Guna, Tita, Vishnu, Paramesh. Is that the verse? Can you read the purport, please, loudly? Oh, here.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'll read the translation too, just so. Lord Shiva is an associate of the external energy, therefore he is absorbed in the material quality of darkness. Lord Vishnu is transcendental to Maya and the qualities of Maya, therefore he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. Vishnu is beyond the range of the material manifestation and he is not within the control of the material energy. Oh, yes, sure. Yeah. Vishnu is beyond the range of the material manifestation and he is not within the control of the material energy. He is the supreme independent personality of Godhead. This is admitted even by Shankaracharya, Narayana Prabhyaktat. In his constitutional form, Shiva is a Mahabhagavata, a supreme devotee of the Lord. But because he accepts Maya's association, especially the quality of ignorance, he is not free from Maya's influence. Such an intimate association is completely absent in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. Lord Shiva accepts Maya, but in the presence of Lord Vishnu, Maya does not exist. Consequently, Lord Shiva has to be considered a product of Maya. When Shiva is free from Maya's influence, he is in the position of a Mahabhagavata, a supreme devotee of Lord Vishnu, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu.
So when Prabhupada says a product of Maya, that's not a Shambhu Tattva Shiva or Vishnu Tattva Shiva, this is Rudra Tattva Shiva. Rudra also has a material body.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sixth canto also clearly says. So we have to see from that angle. This is talking about that Shiva.
I see.
Rudra Tattva Shiva.
Okay, so that would be essentially explanation that there is distinction between Rudra Tattva and Shiva Tattva. Thank you, Prabhu. Thank you so much.
If you don't mind, in the synonyms, Vidambanam is translated as simply imitation, meaning Lord Shiva, his devilish characteristics are simply imitation. I'm wondering, Vidambanam is a word that sounds familiar. Where does it appear somewhere else? Because simply imitation, does that mean like simply superficial?
Yes.
Oh, is that what Vidambanam, where is Vidambanam used elsewhere?
It's in Kunti's prayer.
Oh, yeah. And how is it used there? I'm curious. Thank you. Oh. Are simply, so his devilish characteristics are simply bewildering. Okay. Because
<Yeah.
laughs> imitation, I thought, imitation of who or what or, you know. But.
Yeah, definitely. So externally, his activities appear like devilish, you know, the way he behaves and acts. And Prabhupada is mentioning in purport, I believe, also how, you know, we shouldn't try to imitate his activities by drinking the poison. I think that's what Prabhupada is saying. But, you know, rather than that, we should actually learn from his detachment from the material enjoyment. So, yes.
When it says we should not imitate the activities that Shiva did, like drinking the poison, I mean, naturally there's like, we cannot drink poison, but is here poison also metaphorical or symbolic for Maya, and that he is associated with Maya in a way that we should not be?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, the drinking of poison is just used as a sample. You know, Lord Shiva does so many extraordinary activities, and we can't even possibly try to imitate his activities. Like, he's actually receiving Ganji when she falls from spiritual world on his head. So, it's just one sample, basically. Thank you. Good question. Yes, Madhumati.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for your class. You were talking about how devotees are so special, you know, and how Lord Vishnu is saying his devotees are superior than him. What kind of definition would you give for what a devotee is, in a very broad sense or a narrow sense? All, you know, how would you define a devotee? Because certainly these literatures that we hear are, we read them, and so many other people read them, yeah? And people have read them for years, and all kinds of devotees read them. So, yeah, what would be your definition, what a devotee is?
So basically, I think that's, you know, very good, a very important question. In a broad term, anybody who even chants once Lord's name is considered very, very special, very rare soul, devotee, we can assume. But of course, there is different levels of devotion, and as we know from the scriptures, you know, the basic categories of Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. So it really depends. I don't think there is a one blank answer that we could really use to answer this question. When we think, you know, who is devotee, we should actually think that everybody is devotee. You know, we shouldn't really see, oh, I'm the only devotee. No, everybody else is devotee, but we are just trying to be humble servant of all of them. And if everybody has that attitude, then we will, you know, there is no reason ever to feel like, you know, proud, because you see everybody has more devotion, everybody has more qualities to serve the Lord than ourselves. So, in one sense, devotee sees, especially Uttama Adhikari, he sees all the living entities as potential devotees, even though maybe covered for the moment. Prabhu, you want to comment on?
I was thinking if we focus on the definition of
In a short summary, we can say anukulasya sankalpa pratikulasya varjanam, these are like symptoms of surrender. But then if you say anukulena krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama, so the definition of bhakti is three things primary. One is it has to be for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. But Supreme Lord itself is not Supreme Lord. Supreme Lord is intimate devotee also. Like pleasing Prabhupada is pleasing Krishna. There is no difference in that sense. So that's one. The purpose has to be for the pleasure of Guru Vaishnava or Krishna. Second is, I have to engage my senses, mind, to serve. Not that I pay somebody is going to do for me. Not like that. That is not actually bhakti. Third is, there has to be a favorable attitude while serving, or whether cooking or cleaning, there has to be favorable attitude. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says, when Krishna was wrestling with Chanura and Balaram with Mustika, Krishna is always happy, but still when Chanura was punching Krishna, it looks like Krishna, Sukhdev Goswami mentioned, he is more joyful, he is laughing. So somebody will say, oh, look, he is pleasing God. This is bhakti. This is devotion. He is devotee. No, he is not a devotee. Because his intention was to kill Krishna in that wrestling match, right?
Yep.
So therefore, it is not considered bhakti, even though Krishna was happy. But in opposite case, Mother Yashoda did not want to give him breast milk at that moment because the boil in the stove was overboiling and she had to take care. So she put down by force to Krishna, and Krishna is crying. Then he got angry. Looks like she was not pleasing Krishna. Is this bhakti? Yes, 100% bhakti. Why? Because her intention was that my breast milk was not enough to raise this child as the best boy. I need that milk to make barfi, butter for him. So therefore, it is 100% bhakti because her intention was to please Krishna. So that parameter has to be there, track.
Yep.
That intention, what intention I have, my senses, and for the pleasure. All three together is bhakti. So anybody is doing that way, yes. Otherwise, you can say bhakti pray, you know, like somebody could be drunk or taking, you know, prasadam. He is entering into, it's not really bhakti, but he is getting sukriti towards bhakti. That's why it's called agyata sukriti. All these names are given, there is a reason for it.
Yeah, that's why I said it's a very broad topic. And it could be analyzed from different angles. But thank you, Prabhu. This is a wonderful explanation. Because the intention in the heart is really what determines, you know, where our devotion is. So if the intention is to please the Lord and Lord's devotees, that is the test.
It is not magnitude. It is the attitude. Because I remember Lord Ramchandra talking to Hanumanji about the squirrel versus Hanuman bringing the boulder.
Yeah. And every devotee will have a different capacity to do this seva. Yeah. But as long as we're giving 100% and our attitude and heart is in the right place, we're doing well. Yes. Prabhu, did you want to say something?
The thought's coming to me. I'd be a little careful about that, though, because, you know, we're analyzing what other people's bhakti is, you know. You'd be a little careful about that.
No, nectar of devotion, bro, that's what Prabhupada gave us.
I know. I didn't say we don't analyze. I didn't say we don't analyze. Okay. I mean, I'm Mr. Analysis here, you know. but I'm just saying, good to be a little careful about that. I mean, you know, it's like someone's coming and taking prasadam, and we're going to be like, well, it's not bhakti. I mean, there's different gradations of bhakti.
Yeah.
You know, this full pure devotional service, and this like a spark, you know, there's all kinds of, you know, in our condition, something's being expressed. Why would they even be here to take prasadam? They could be anywhere. You know, they could be at McDonald's. But yet there's something bringing them here, you know, between them and Krishna. And we can analyze it all we want. It's fine. We're engaging jnana in devotional service and bhakti, but ultimately it's going to be between Krishna and that individual. So, you know, it's good to keep it in mind. Then the other little thought is, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about Shiva. Gosh, you know, he's ahead of a sampradaya, and, you know, Prabhupada says in his constitutional position, he's a Mahabhagavat, and here we are analyzing, well, that's there. It's in the books. But again, perhaps, you know, a little sensitivity. I mean, he's a Mahabhagavat. It's constitutional position. He's head of a sampradaya. And here we're worrying. And here, that's fine. But in here we are, like, you know, worrying about all these different incarnations. Like we're meeting Shiva every day, and we got to figure out what Shiva we're meeting?
Yes.
You do. Okay, well, I'm just saying, it's good to be a little careful about that, because his constitutional position, he's head of a sampradaya, and, you know. But there are these things there. These things are there, and it's good to keep them in mind.
Nirguna bhavet. You want to get out of Maya? Don't worship Shiva. That verse says, you can open and see it. Prabhu, that different Shiva. This Shiva who is associating with Maya, is a product of Maya, bewildering. That verse says, Nirguna bhavet. When you want to get out of Maya, do not worship that Shiva. You worship Vishnu. It is surrender to Vishnu pleases Shiva, not that surrendering to Shiva pleases Shiva. Does not say that.
We have to be very straightforward.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful discussion, and thank you all for your feedback. I think we will stop here. Garantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.